The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off this week with a complete NFL-focused breakdown of what happened in college football on Tuesday afternoon. After that, we've got a recurring guest, and I know you guys know and love. He'll be in to break down the 2021 draft class quarterbacks and also the challenge that all quarterbacks are facing this year and something that could affect the NFL season in an adverse way. And as always, we wrap the whole thing up with all of your questions in the six-pack. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We are on the cusp of NFL teams starting real football practices by the 14th, which I believe, I don't have my calendar up right now, Friday. The Texans and Chiefs will be putting pads on by next Monday. The rest of the league will have pads on. So we're getting closer to football season. And I do want to get into all of that eventually. And I'll answer some of your questions on the NFL eventually. But as we're recording this right now, some major news has broken. I would say probably the biggest news that we've had sports related, the biggest cancellations we've had sports related coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Big Ten and Pac-12 have canceled their fall sports seasons. I know at this point the Big Ten has talked about moving it to the spring. I think it's unrealistic. The Pac-12, I'm not sure if we've heard that from them yet. The Big 12, by the time you listen to this, may have made a decision. I think they were slated to vote tonight. The ACC and SEC reportedly are holding strong. I don't cover college sports, so I don't have maybe the level of insight that I would have. I want to, before we get to the takeaways with Crash, I just want to say I'm not going to be one of those hypocrites, okay? So there are lots of hypocrites here, all right? There's the university presidents who are opening campuses up. And if you know what Big Ten campuses look like, I mean, these are massive campuses. I think I think the majority of the schools have over 40,000 undergrad enrollment. I went to one of those schools, as many of you know. I'm just telling you, like, social distancing, like all the different guidelines, like unfollowable if you're opening your campus, right? Like, so you can't tell me that you're okay with welcoming tens of thousands of students onto campus, right? And then saying you can't take care of a couple hundred student athletes, and then tell me that this is about health and safety. This is about liability, period, end of story. So I think the university, there's some hypocrisy to the university presidents in this case. I think a lot of the people who usually are backing the players, and rightfully so, like the players, I think deserve some level of compensation. I think the players have been screwed for a long time. I think the NCAA had a long time to fix this problem, and that's a big piece of what's happening now. And they didn't, but those same people are telling you don't listen to the players now. And I think a lot of those people have no freaking clue what goes into being an athlete, the amount of work that goes into it, the amount of emotion that goes into it, and how difficult this is for every single athlete, no matter whether they're going to the NFL or not. They have no idea what this is like and how hard this is for those kids. So I feel bad for all of those kids. On the flip side, there are people who would never want an athlete to have a right that are now telling you to listen to the athletes. So it exists on both ends of it. And I guess I'm quote unquote both sides-ing it. But there are hypocrites on both sides of this. I think the university presidents are like, look, we all know the score here. They're welcoming all those students, all the regular students back to campus because they can't lose the tuition. That's why that's happening, right? That's why that's happening. And if you want to talk about money, the money involved there at that level dwarfs what, and college sports makes a huge money-making machine. But these university presidents cannot come out here and take this higher ground when they're opening the campuses to all the kids. So I think there's a lot of hypocrisy on a lot of different levels. I'm going to try not to be a hypocrite here, Gresh. We bring you in for the takeaways. I'm going to try not to be a hypocrite here. It's sad, man. It sucks. It sucks. And I grew up watching college football. Like college football and the NFL, like football is my favorite sport in general. I like going to high school. I bring my kids. I mean, I don't just cover football for a living. I bring my kids to high school games on Friday nights. You know what I mean? Just like my dad did for me. And I know that you obviously can relate with that growing up in Western Pennsylvania. So just to see the plug pulled, I understand it, but to see the plug pulled on the Big 10 and the Pac-12 and I look, probably all of college football this fall, it just sucks.
Well, number one, don't feel bad for your hypocrisy, because I think a part of the human element in the times we live right now is that we need to embrace some of the hypocrisy within ourselves, or, Bert, just say, hey, you know what? I can be for Black Lives Matter, but I don't want to defund the police. Like, you're allowed to have two contradictory thoughts. Everyone tries to make it that, by God, you got to have this one thought process or this thought process.
And I'm glad you said that.
But seriously, but in reality,
it's true. It's like if you don't agree with me 100%, then you're an idiot, right?
And
that's our whole culture now.
It is, and that's the social media end of things. Look, I'm a sports yakker. I probably don't contribute very well in terms of being a positive light in a situation like this. But like on my national show on CBS Sports Radio on Sunday night, I actually asked the question, because you know what I kept seeing is that if anybody reported anything, it was, oh, you're rooting for the season to be canceled. So people like you and others who would even put a nugget out there, it would be, well, you're rooting for this or you're rooting for that. And look, you hit a tiny little bit, Bert, of the layers of all of this. So think about it, right? What would be a reason for people to root against college football? Oh, I don't know. The system that has put us in this place right now. Right. You mentioned the hypocrisy. Do you know who the five biggest hypocrites are in all of this? Are the five major conference commissioners. You know why? Because years ago, they made a concerted effort to tell the NCAA, UBATS, we don't need you. Kick rocks. And then now that the is hitting the fan and you're all over it, it is the liability issue. They can't get any help from the NCAA on that end, the COVID waivers, things of that nature. So now we're really realizing, and for those who maybe lived under a rock, Bird, they're now realizing it's a business. Because if it was really about the health and safety of the players, they wouldn't have even shown up to begin with. But the reason they got to pull the plug on part of it is because they're worried about a lawsuit that would be brought against them that apparently would be bigger, one a bigger one that would be brought against them if an average student caught COVID-19. And then you get into name, image, and likeness. They've got cranius rectus on that. The fact that you have, you know, one school's doing this, one school's doing that. And then, Bert, let's throw in the real complicated layer as I go off on this. State by state. Oh, what the hell they're doing in Alabama, bro?
I want to get to that because that is...
Please do.
I mean, okay, so in two levels, this is reflective of what's happening in our country, all right? Number one, we couldn't follow directions.
Nope.
We couldn't, like, people couldn't help themselves. You had to go out on Memorial Day weekend. You couldn't let this screw, like, you acted as if there was like an expiration date on the disease, right? And like, well, I can't take this anymore. If we had all, and I know this because I have family in Western Europe, if we had handled this better off the jump, from the jump, we wouldn't be in this position. So that's number one. And I think that it's the same thing I've said with the NFL. I was getting my kid's haircut today and somebody asked me, like, is the NFL season going to get played? I've given everyone the same answer. Whatever happens in our country will dictate that. It's not up to the NFL. It's up to all of us. It's up to everybody in America to handle this better than we have over the last 5 or 6 months. Number two, this is, I mean, how ironic is it that the college football season was taken down by a, like, just like it went down in the manner where it was just passing the buck, and the mess at the end of it is just about one person passing the buck to the other, passing the buck to the other. Over the last couple of weeks, I've talked to coaches at Ohio State, at Oklahoma, at Boston College, and Florida. I talked to Dan Mullen this morning. Football coaches are in charge of this. Think about that. NFL teams aren't putting, and they're doing a damn good job too. Like, these guys are like, because you know what? They're listening to the doctor. A lot of them, and I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of them are listening to the doctors. They're working on, they're protecting the kids. And like, that shouldn't be a football coach's job, but that's a result of things getting passed down from level to level. It's why city mayors are in charge of managing COVID-19. Like, right? Like, why is the mayor of a, like, when we know how this thing spreads, why is this like a town by town thing? Like, oh, well, it's not a problem in our town. All right. So I don't know. It's like, why? Like,
well, but to your point, to what you laid out from a state, town.
But that's what's happening in college football. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly right.
And
the five people who set it up that way are those five big conference commissioners who are now looking to someone else to help them when they never wanted the NCAA involved to begin with. Like, that's the, they made the big money grab and now they're in the spot to where they have to handle it and they're rubes who can't. So they just, like you said, they just keep passing the buck. And unfortunately it all flows downhill because there's no real NCAA backstop. The conferences are just like, oh my God, how do we get our money? You know, look, let's be real here. From the monetary standpoint, we could all understand why the SEC would want to play football. I mean, we're talking $45, $50 million per team that allows them. But again, it goes to show that business and the potential of litigation, as you had mentioned earlier on this part, is one of the driving causes in all this. They're going to tell us about the heart diseases that could be connected to COVID-19. Look, here's the other part of this too, real quick. But you'd mentioned about opening college campuses, right? So yep. Doesn't that work both ways, right? So the general populace could be back, but no, our conference isn't letting us playing football. So how in the world do we justify that? Or it's the proverbial, it's not safe to bring back students. Well, we've created our own bubble now, so why can't we turn around and go play? And I think for a lot of college presidents who knows who the college presidents are at a lot of these schools and what their contracts are, maybe, you know what, if you're like 6 months to go on your deal as a school president, what are you going to do? You're probably going to be told to err on the side of caution. So there's so many layers to this. It's just gross because that's the way the system is built that we have all gotten off on every Saturday and that I've made money on every Saturday in terms of college football.
You know what's funny about it too is like I hate to relate this. It sounds like it's trivial, right? But can't we relate this to the video game? Now, I think this is like sort of interesting, right?
Okay.
So you remember the NCAA video game? I loved the NCAA video game when I was a kid, right? Like I was playing it well into my 20s, you know?
And I are zooming right now. I could walk to the other side of my room and go get my copy.
I could give you a stack of them. I had them. I literally stopped buying video games. Like when I was 34, I literally stopped buying video games when they discontinued that series.
I love that.
All right. So that was an opportunity for them. Right? That was an opportunity for them because that game was a great way to get people interested in the sport, and it was a huge driver, just the same way Madden is for the NFL, right? And there was an opportunity there when the O'Bannon case happened and everything else, there was an opportunity there for them to say, you know what? We need to start making some common sense decisions here. Let's go to the Olympic model. Let's let guys benefit from their name, image, and likeness. Let's use the video game as sort of a launching point for all of this. And let's just reinvent the college model. And you know what happens then? What happens then is they rethink everything, right? And so at that point, I think it's, you know, it's just, to me, it's like you could have used that one thing to dive into, we're going to reinvent things. And we're not going to get caught flat-footed. And we're going to get in front of a problem that's brewing because everyone knew that problem was brewing. Instead, what'd they do?
Buried their head in the sand and ignored the problem.
They did what happens in a lot of industries, right? This is like why newspapers and magazines, this is why this has happened to these industries. Because you get old people who are in charge who look at it and say, I don't want to change because I don't know how to do that other stuff. I'm not as good at it. So let's see if I can make it till retirement. And then it'll be somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. It happens in a lot of industries. It's destroyed the media. And I'm telling you, it's 100% a piece of what's happened in college sports. I think, and we're going to jump into the takeaways now. The two groups of people I feel worst for here. Number one, the college football players. It sucks. It really does. I mean, and all those kids from the NFL-bound kids to the ones who can't, I mean, you know, the high school coach here in here in the town I live in, his son's was going into his fourth year as a starting quarterback at Williams College. Sucks for him. You know what I mean? He was going to be a team captain. He's going to actually go back for a fifth year. I just feel bad for all the kids at every level of college football for what's happening here. And I feel almost worse for the athletes in other sports, because I'm telling you, if you think that this is going to result in the end of college football and basketball, you're wrong. That's the golden goose. And the people who are going to feel this, if I was a scholarship athlete at a Power Five conference in a non-revenue sport, I would be shaking in my freaking boots right now.
Yeah, because I know.
That's where the pinch is going to happen.
I know you and I are going to get to the future in a little bit. I've got some thoughts on that. I think with college football paused, they should be on alert. But I don't think they should be completely scared just yet. However, that is coming up on this college whatnot edition of the Burt Breer whatnot.
All right, so we're going to go through the five takeaways here. I think the immediate thing is what this means, you know, for players that are NFL bound. We're going to hit this draft wise in a couple different ways. I think this is going to lead to an exodus, even if the SEC and ACC hold strong. Here's what I think is going to happen. You're going to see the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the Big 12 athletes, the ones who we know are NFL bound. Penei Sewell, the big offensive tackle from Oregon. Kawhidi Pei, the big defensive end from Michigan, yep, who's a Rhode Island guy.
That's right.
Justin Fields and Sean Wade, much as it pains me to say it, from Ohio State. I think you're going to see the high-end draft prospects in those two conferences sign with agents probably fairly soon. Those guys are going to go into draft prep. Now, if you're a top-end kid at a Big 12 school, an ACC school, or an SEC school, right, what do? Now it's a race.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in a race, and those kids are getting in front of you now. And so are you going to take part in a bastardized college season that's always going to be looked at a little weird, or are you going to declare for the draft?
I think if you're a first rounder, Bert, you would be smart to declare, because who knows who knows what situation you're going to walk into in terms of your playing time. It might hurt your stock.
So, yeah, my first takeaway is I'm trying to think of some examples for you. Like, I'm still getting to know the draft class a little bit better. But, I mean, I think Alabama's got a few of them, right? Like, if you're Najee Harris at Alabama or you're Devontae Smith at Alabama or you're – you know, Trevor Lawrence would be the obvious one at Clemson. That's a big domino. I don't know. It's a little different for a quarterback. But Travis Etienne, the running back at Clemson. If you're one of those kids, I think you look at it and you say to yourself, like, why am I staying now? Like, this is going to be – this season is going to be a mess. Half the country isn't playing. I'm out. You know, so I think that that's going to be the first – that's my first takeaway is that I think that that's going to be a piece of this.
Yeah, and I think for the NFL, they're now in a terrible spot because last year's draft grades for kids are what is, in theory, going to stick to them in terms of this year's draft. So, Bert, you know, we know that the NFL has kind of cleaned up their process a little bit in terms of the way they give the players. They don't kind of lead them on, per se. It's a little more realistic as to what they can be. Well, what about those kids who thought, okay, I'll do that process after this coming season versus the year before? So there's going to be getting information. I can only imagine what it's going to be like in the agent world and coaches having to deal with agents.
That's already happening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Greg Rousseau already signed with Rosenhaus, I think. Yeah. So some of it will happen on the first rounders, but you know this as well as I do. It's those mid to late round guys who get delusions of grandeur because an agent gets into hawk thinking this is going to be his big ticket. Guys end up getting bad info. In terms of, I mean, look, what's our buddy Jim Nagy do with the Senior Bowl, right? Like, do you have college all-star games for these guys?
I think it sort of depends on where we're at. I mean, this could wind up being great, right? Like, could wind up being great for him. But that's all dependent, again, on where we are as a country. You know, as of right now in this environment, that'd be a horrible idea to bring people from all over the country together in one spot. You can't do it, right?
Right now, yes. But, right. You know, would you be able to come up with some sort of smaller practice structure that the pros would be using amid COVID-19? Yeah. You know, the reason I bring that up is, Bert, if we're going to have, let's say we're going to have 300 guys out there who, outside of the first round, who all think they should be drafted, how do they show their wares? It may end up being a situation like that. But, you know, if I think I'm getting drafted and I know I'm going to get a payday, I think I just step out and start getting ready and see if there's an all-star game I can play in. And if not, brush up on as much NFL skills as I can.
Number two, I do think that this has potential to affect the future for the NFL. And, you know, I look back to like Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette, and I think there was one other one that year. Like, those guys opted out of their bowl game, right? And
wasn't it a kid from Oregon who got drafted in like the sixth round or something?
It might have been. There were a few of them that first year. McCaffrey was, I believe, the first one to kind of jump off. And then a couple others followed him. Obviously, now it's I think it's been normalized, right? And, you know, because it didn't affect where Christian McCaffrey was drafted, it certainly hasn't affected his NFL career. A lot of people, you know, I think more kids have felt comfortable doing that. It's given other kids cover to make that decision. If we have 15 or 20 kids skip their last year and wind up okay, does that change the dynamic now going forward? Because now kids in the future have cover to skip an entire year. Right. So I think that to me, the NFL, now I'm not saying it's every kid, because there are certain kids that just love the college experience, love playing college football. Some of the kids at the big programs, you know, maybe you fall short of a national title and that's something you still want to pursue. And I think all of that will still exist. But don't you think that this gives cover to some kids who might be great as freshmen and sophomores and then just decide, I don't want to take the risk anymore? So I think that there's definitely potential there where that affects the NFL. And here's the other part, Gresh. Does that encourage the NFL to relax their rules, the three-year rule? And a lot of people don't realize this. A lot of people think that the college football system is what keeps kids in school. It's not. That's an NFL rule. The three-year rule is an NFL rule. Right. And when Maurice Claret and Mike Williams tried to enter the draft in 2004, who were they suing?
They were suing the NFL.
Right. So I think that this has got potential. Like, so does the NFL look at it now? If a bunch of kids, say 20 of the 32 first rounders, don't play this, maybe it's all of them. If all college football is canceled, maybe it's all of them, right? Mm-hmm. How does that affect the future for the NFL? You know, and does the NFL have to look at that, start to look at it pragmatically then and say, you know, maybe we need to relax this rule if we don't want kids just, you know, spending entire years in training facilities and not playing football.
It's interesting because as you start to work through that, you know what I thought of was Jadeveon Clowney. Remember, right. Big hit bowl game, South Carolina. Yep. Oh my God, this kid has to go back another year when he's ready. And he was still the, you know, number one pick in the draft or whatever, you know, however it turned out to be that Clowney went and was able to manage through a year at South Carolina. I mean, Ed Oliver kind of shut it down at Houston 2 years ago, like mm-hmm. in the middle of a season. So it's not like this hasn't been talked about before. And
It's usually been injury, suspension, or like it's usually been related to
sure.
Like when guys have missed, Tyrann Mathieu was an obvious one. Mm-hmm. Nick Bosa, Miles Jack, there have been a few.
And I think if you're the NFLPA, because they're the ones who are ultimately going to, right? It's been yeah. negotiated between the NFL and the NFLPA on sort of the rule as to when these kids can come in from college. You know, I don't know how to feel about that. If I'm a veteran player, I'm like, nope.
That's why it's been easy for the NFL to keep that rule intact, because it's a collectively bargained rule. That's one reason why it's been easy for the NFL to keep that rule intact for as long as they have, because it benefits the guys who are in the NFLPA that the uber talented kid, the uber talented 19 or 20 year old can't come into the league.
So will a Bosa or a Clowney or a Miles Jack look at it and say, no, if I had the opportunity to, I would have come out after my sophomore year. Maybe it should only be 2 years, because we could argue that the guys that are good enough as sophomores in college are physically capable to deal with playing against men at the NFL level. So from that end, yes, I think it could lead to the NFL opening their eyes to it. I could see a tweak to 2 years, and there might be a segment of NFL people, and you know this as well as anybody, who would be like, that's a college problem. I don't care what happens to them in their third yeah. year. We're not letting them in after three, and that's it. Because that's right. the way the NFL kind yeah. of operates. It's like, screw everybody else. We're the big fish. React to us.
All right. Third takeaway. If you're The Rock, what are you doing right now?
Oh, you're well, first of all, you're celebrating a great Titans game finale on NBC. No, but in all seriousness, you're thinking, oh, these kids are going to fall right into my lap. It's juicy nuggets of deliciousness for him.
I mean, do you set up a bubble?
I don't
know. And try to give those kids like a 6-game season or something?
I know there was the rumblings of some sort of bubble league to give them something. If you could pull, well, would you be able to get enough talent? Is my first question.
I think part of it probably depends on if all of college football shuts down, right?
That would be a part of it. But even then,
and then you could have the guys who played in the XFL in the spring, because how many games did those guys play?
I think it was 4 or 5. It ended up being. Yeah, so they'd be
fine to play again if they're not in the league now, right?
All right, so let's just do some quick math here. Let's say you need for 6 teams, I went 55. So you're looking at 330 players. Okay. Are there 330 players that are out there who would want to participate in something like that? Because some of the people they would be pulling from, and you know this, the Tuesday visits, bringing in street free agents is going to be crazy this year. Do those kids look at it, or do guys look at it and say, no, I'd rather not play because I don't want to get hurt, or this is my only way to get noticed? I would wonder about the quality of player that league would get. Because
yeah, like, maybe
it's
possible. It's possible too. You know, now that I kind of workshop this a little bit more in my head, it's also possible if, you know, you're Trevor Lawrence and say Clemson, the ACC cancels its season. Isn't it possible that you just say, I'm not going and playing behind some offensive line I don't know?
If I'm
Trevor Lawrence, I'm in Malibu working out right now.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Knowing him, he'll be in like, you know, Augusta, Georgia or something like that. Yeah. Some part. But in all seriousness, if I'm The Rock, I'm sitting there thinking, how can I capitalize this for my spring league? When can I start? Like, that's where The Rock, you know, starts to make some phone calls and try to figure out, or at least have an idea, hey, when might there be a vaccine? Because if I'm him, what I'm saying to some of the college kids now is, look, if you think this system doesn't work for you and you're 2 years away from being able to go to the NFL, you're going to miss a college season. Come play in my spring XFL, get yourself noticed. Then you're in the pipeline to get into training. Who knows? Maybe they amend some Senior Bowl rules, or The Rock puts on some sort of game with XFL guys as some sort of showcase. There's got to be a way for him to capitalize on this. But, Bert, I just don't know if the fall is – I don't think it might the fall be, is doable.
It'd be hard. It'd be hard. Okay. Takeaway number four. To me, the draft impact here, if the season's canceled altogether – I don't think it affects Trevor Lawrence. I don't think it affects Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Penei Sewell. You know, the guys who are going to go at the top, obviously Micah Parsons and Greg Rousseau, they've already thrown their names in the hat. I think, to me, the one that got me, that kind of like contextualized it for me, was seeing Joe Burrow's tweet. Right? Like, do you see what he tweeted the other day?
I did, yes. Because
there was no season...
Because the woman I saw interviewing Coach O about it called him Joey, which right. is what he puts on his Twitter. So literally not knowing who he is, they would call him Joey when us sports dudes don't call him that.
So like look at the last three number one overall picks, right? So you have right there, like right down the line, Baker Mayfield was probably a third or fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray was a baseball player. And Joe Burrow is probably a third or fourth round pick going into their final collegiate years.
Maybe.
So that's the guy who pays right now. And there are lots of other players at great programs who have been one-year starters who are just behind really good players. And I'll use the example that I know because it's where I went to school, but Marshawn Lattimore was hurt a bunch and behind Eli Apple and Gary and Connolly at Ohio State. Had a great 2016 season and then wound up declaring for the 17 draft. Now he's one of the best corners in football. Those two, Lattimore and then Connolly, were blocking Denzel Ward. Denzel Ward winds up becoming the full-time guy in 2017, and he's the fourth pick in the draft the next year. And there are examples like that at a handful of the big schools. There are a ton of examples like that of guys who are just blocked by somebody in front of them or who needed another year of development. And that's the guy who's hurt. Like that's the guy who's sort of stuck in no man's land if they don't play, right? Like where, you know, you're just sort of like, you know what you can do, but you just haven't had the opportunity to prove it.
Yeah. And I think of, look, as a guy who played FCS level college football and all of the guys who have made it from that level, is it a pipeline like the SEC? No, but it's a pretty damn good one. There have been a lot of players out of that level of football who've come in and made a big impact. And I agree with you. Look, I feel for all of the players that are affected by this. But I guess for me, I look at it in terms of the guys at the big schools in that if they're, you know, like Joe Burrow, right? It was Ohio State, then he goes to LSU. But why did he get a chance, and why would he have maybe been drafted even if he didn't have the great year he did? Because he was highly thought of out of college. You know, look at the Patriots drafting out of high school. Look at Jarrett Stidham, right? He had like, what, 1 year at Auburn? But the Patriots were like, well, we went all the way back with this guy. Whereas those kids like me and other FCSers, they didn't have that background for people to go into. And it's just, well, if I can't justify what round I think he could be drafted, then I don't know. Maybe we just put him in a pile with everybody else and try to figure it out. It's going to stink relative to draft prep and finding a way for guys to get out. And you know what, Bert? Get ready for it, because Now, with the age of social media, we're going to have so many guys that are going to be pimping their workouts. Look at what I did. Look what I'm working with. Bah, bah, bah. Bench pressing 500 pounds.
Box jumps.
Dude, get ready for it. You know it's going to be, hey, I got to find a way to impress these dudes. And honestly, it's going to be like the Titan Games Olympics out there for these guys prepping for the NFL draft. And if you're a scout, bro, like, you know a ton of people in that world. How in the world do you try to find a way to justify your bosses, your thoughts on a player that you really like?
I think you know what it is, though, Gresh? I mean, it's going to be sort of like journalism. Like, your connections are really going to matter. And that's the GMs I've talked to, like, their connections at the college level really freaking count now. Like, knowing I can get a straight answer from somebody on something, knowing I can get a straight answer from somebody from a coach, from an assistant coach, from a, you know, from a an ops person, from a strength coach, from a trainer, like having those connections on the ground in these different colleges is going to be so valuable now, right? Like, because those are the guys that know. And those, especially at the big schools where they have contexts of like this person versus that person, like every GM I've talked to has said, you know, the guys who are the most connected now are going to have a huge, huge advantage going into the 2021 draft.
Yep. And I think those that have the ability to unearth talent or to maybe see, you know, hey, I don't need a starting defensive tackle in the fourth round, but I need a guy who can, you know, hold the interior on first and second down. Something, you know, those are the people that are going to win. Can I go identify a mid-round player that will actually fill a need and be a part of my rotation? Let's throw another curveball into this. What if you have a college football season in the spring, and then you have a college football season in the fall? This just doesn't affect guys this year. Let's say you play great in the spring, you get hurt in the fall. Or you play right. So bad in the spring, you lose your job in the fall. Or, you know what I mean? Just the whole, there's so much uncertainty around potentially jamming back-to-back college football seasons into one another that alone is going to affect some draft prospects in a negative way.
And I don't think a spring season is going to happen, but if it does, you better believe the NFL is going to move its draft back.
See?
I mean, like, and I'm telling you.
Is it because GMs want it?
No, it's because the NFL will not mess with college football. And the deal the NFL has, like what college football is for the NFL, they have a free minor league. B, they have a foundation for their biggest offseason event, right? The draft. The draft wouldn't be nearly the deal, big deal it was if college football wasn't wildly popular. It would not be near what it is. And then three, they've got a marketing machine for future stars of the league. Like Baker Mayfield came into the league a star. Yep. Tim Tebow came into the league a star. Jadeveon Clowney came into the league a star. Like these guys come into the league now with huge, huge name recognition. Like who knew who Mike Trout was when he got called up to the Angels?
I didn't.
Like, right?
And I didn't.
Like you have a prodigy every so often. How has college basketball, how is like the one and dones and, you know, the straight from high school for a while, how has that affected the NBA draft and the influx of foreign born players? Nobody cares about the NBA draft outside of a couple picks now. The NFL draft's a big deal because we've heard of all of the players. And so that A creates the foundation for the event and B makes these guys ready made stars. So those are two elements that are really important on top of the fact that they don't have to pay for any of it. The NFL is a free minor league. Do you know how hard it would be, how expensive it would be for the NFL to have to pay to shepherd kids through from 18 to 21 years old to get them ready to play in the league?
It's an
enormous financial burden that's off their shoulders.
No question. I mean, they got it great. I still think they'll test college football a little bit. And let's also not forget that there's probably only about two or three networks that are paying big money to be involved with all these people, and they got to figure out a television roadmap as well.
Finally, my fifth takeaway, this will affect the future of college sports. I don't think there's any question about it. The money lost is going to be enormous. I think all sports are dealing with this on one level or another, but canceling a season, I mean, it's it's going to be cataclysmic for in these towns. A lot of them, a big part of the economy is driven by college football, believe it or not. So it's going to affect those places. And I think the future of college sports now is going to be a reckoning for the business of college football and basketball. And I think it probably, winds up being I think the name, image, and likeness thing is probably a foregone conclusion thing now. There's probably some reform in the way that the rest of college sports are, how athletes, in those sports are compensated. And that is horrible news for all female athletes and every men's athlete that can't, play, that doesn't play football or basketball.
We are getting close to Armageddon, friend. However, we're not there yet. And I'm going off of a conversation that I had with a FCS commissioner whose teams mainly get the majority of their money through the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So the big football factories, of course, they're going to take their hit, but they know ultimately the money is going to come back in. You missed NCAA tournament revenue for the majority of the schools that are playing NCAA sports. Football does not make them a ton of money. In fact, it might even be a loss leader for some. Yeah. So the context of the conversation you and I had today are probably really centered around anywhere from 75 to 90 schools. The rest need the NCAA tournament. And where the real Armageddon would hit, and to your point, I'm not with you yet. It should be on everyone's radar. But if the NCAA tournament or a college basketball season is compromised, then it will be the true Armageddon for college sports. And one of the first things I think that will have to be looked at is Title IX, because even though Title IX is good in spirit, what it has done is led to, yes, irresponsible spending, but unnecessary spending because you have to balance certain things out. It's almost a forced failed economic model onto a lot of these institutions that maybe that ends up getting fixed. But if we get into no NCAA tournament or that college basketball season gets sideways, that's when the majority of the schools feel the pinch because they don't have those big football dollars or endowments to fall back on.
And correct me if I'm, I think like, so at least some of the money, the NCAA tournament money was insured last year. I think it's different. Like it doesn't, it's not that the insurance doesn't cover you for a second year cancellation. So that's something to kind of like you said, keep on your radar because that's the NCAA money.
Yes. And that's where, and again, the Power Fives are hoarding the money for themselves. It will change the way they have to do business, but ultimately the coffers get filled again. This is revenue and money lost that will never come back. And I'll be honest with you. I know you and I are getting ready to wrap this up. I didn't think we'd be at this spot. I thought for sure, and you and I probably talked about it a million times along the way, the Power Fives were going to figure it out. And I'm really surprised that a league like the Big Ten ended up banging out their season, or as you say, everyone's willing to push it all into the fall.
Yep. I thought they'd at least try. Like maybe they wouldn't finish and maybe it would prove to be too difficult to do in a college environment, but I thought they'd at least try. So most of all, Gresh, you know this, I'm sad. I love college football. I it's just the idea of fall Saturdays without it, and I hope we get something, but the idea of fall Saturdays without it really, really sucks.
Yeah, otherwise you and I are going to be like playing golf on Saturdays if we're allowed to. You and I have never seen each other as much in the last year as we have over Zoom this year.
That's crazy
when you think about it. But if we have Saturdays open, maybe we can help our handicaps.
There you go. All right, Gresh, appreciate you coming out. And we'll get to our special guest in just one second. I want to give you guys just a heads up on this. He and I talked before the Big Ten and the Pac-12 canceled. It was only an hour or two before, so it sort of, we knew it might be coming down the pike. But just for context, when you guys are listening, keep that in mind. We'll get to him right after this.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
All right, we're going to bring back one of our favorite guests here. And honestly, this is like one of the guys that I normally talk to preview the college season. We'll see if there's going to be a college season because we normally go through the quarterbacks with him ahead of the fall to give you guys a look at who's coming. He actually helped me kind of identify Joe Burrow last year at this time, and we're going to get to all of that with him. We're also going to talk a lot of NFL with him. Welcome back in Jordan Palmer of QB Summit. Jordan, what's going on?
Not much. Well, I mean, a lot of stuff is going on. just not much. Not much of it is related to people running around playing football on the field. So weird times.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's definitely been a different summer. There's no question about that. So here's where I want to start. You know, you've obviously, you know, you work with a lot of these guys, and I know it's obviously been a different, you know, offseason from that standpoint too. Now I'm just wondering, like, I guess where I want to start with you is just talking about how getting a guy ready for camp, getting a guy ready for the NFL season, how you maybe adjusted that or you're approaching it a little differently with your NFL guys than you have in the past?
Well, for what I do, it had a positive and a negative effect. It had a negative effect on the amount of guys I could work with because I was supposed to have what would have looked like almost like an eighth of the quarterbacks in the NFL out here. I was going to have a big group of guys out here coming and going throughout this whole offseason. And once COVID became a real thing in March. And, you know, really once pro days started getting canceled, which was in March, and ultimately Joe Burrow's got canceled in April, it was when LSU's was supposed to happen. That's kind of when everyone said, hey, I'm going to wait and see here about flying and, you know, throwing. So I ended up training a much smaller group of guys, which was the negative. But the positive was the guys that I got to work with, we were uninterrupted for what really ended up being 5.5 months. They didn't leave for OTAs. They didn't have shoots, right? They didn't have marketing stuff. They weren't in LA for 3 days for these production days. And they didn't have vacations. And, you know, these guys are 22, 23, 24 years old, which is kind of like wedding season. You know, when you're that age, you go to like 5 weddings every summer.
Yeah.
Like, they also didn't have weddings to go to. So for Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Kyle Allen, those three core guys who kind of all have like bought houses where I live now and are kind of making this home, we were really uninterrupted for 5.5 months. So I trained a lot fewer guys, but we got a lot more done and we're able to really build out a really cool plan. Instead of a 4-week plan and then they leave, we just kind of ended up building out a 5-month plan, and the results ended up being pretty incredible.
Well, it's just like, let's look at those three then. Like, how do you think those three are going to, how do you think we're going to be able to see it from those three, kind of what you guys were able to accomplish?
Well, I think what they were able to accomplish in that time, and it's not training with me, it's the combination of, there's a woman named Naomi who's our strength coach, and then we bring in a, you know, speed coach. And then you've got, you know, this guy, Drew Marcos from Modus, who's, in my opinion, the best physical therapist. And so it was really like this program that was built out. And for me, I'm able to test. So I work with Wilson footballs, and there's a chip in the ball. So I can literally test spiral efficiency, which is an algorithm 1 through 100, where you can literally measure the integrity of the spiral. It's basically what we call it. Mm-hmm. There's also miles per hour, which is just velocity, and then spin rate, which is RPMs, revolutions per minute. And so we saw major gains in all three of those guys across those three categories, which is really relevant, right? That goes back to like ball never lies.
Wait, you know, so Josh Allen's throwing it harder now than he was before.
spinning it better.
Okay.
So better spiral efficiency and just consistency on that. Mm-hmm. Was the biggest jump with him. But then also I use this program called Biometric. And so they basically set up 16 high-speed motion capture cameras around the guys. We test every 3 weeks. And now we can start to look at their upper and lower body disassociation. So from their pelvis to their torso, how much separation are you getting? How much flexibility are you and better rotation are you getting to the right and to the left? So these are like little things that fans are not going to see and wouldn't follow. The casual fan wouldn't follow. But we set out goals and they were able to, in 5.5 months, do that and make these changes. And so the result is they throw it better. And so, go ahead.
Is there anything that you did specific to this year to get them ready differently? Like forget the time. Like, is there anything that you felt like you had to prepare them for? And this can be mental too. Like, is there anything like that you really felt like it was important to make sure you gave those guys as they went back to their camps, not having had a spring? Obviously camp's going to be sideways to begin with. Like, is there anything that you like really felt like it was important for you guys to drill down before they walked into this really unusual circumstance?
Yeah, for sure. I always look at it through the lens of trying to help guys become triple threats. So physically, mentally, and emotionally. And so on the physical side of it, we did a lot, way more off platform, and what I call getting to your shot. So basically movement and then get set really quick and get rid of the ball. Because I think O-line play across the board is going to be the worst we've ever seen. I think guys, quarterbacks are going to be running for their lives at a rate that we've never seen before. The reason is because this whole screwed up offseason, I don't think had very much of a negative effect on the defensive linemen. These guys still could work out. They can still work on their burst, getting out of their stance. They can still run that hoop where they work about keeping their hips low and leaning. They can still work on bending. They didn't really lose anything out of this. Offensive line, and I had Andrew Whitworth on my Solomon Wilcots and I have a show on Sirius and XM NFL Radio on Thursdays, and we had Andrew Whitworth on as a guest, and he was talking about how he's a really good golfer and how O-line play is getting more and more like golf, where it's very, very technical. It's very muscle memory over and over again. So those guys not having an off season, that's a major, major negative effect. So O-line is really, really hit by this whole COVID thing, not getting a chance to pass off twists, not getting a chance to work on full speed bull rush, not getting a chance to work on, you know, switching things off and where your hands need to be. D-line plays is D-line is not affected. So I think quarterbacks are going to be running for their lives. So we literally spent 60% of the throws that we did. They were not dropping back and throwing. They were being asked to move or forced to move. So that was the biggest thing right there. The second thing is I think we're going to see a lot of injuries, a lot of soft tissue injuries at all positions because guys haven't been training the way that they've been working out, but they haven't been chasing people, right? So figuring out ways to get, you know, if you lose two receivers, getting other guys up and running. So really it was on the mental side of things. How do you get to a place where you are completely fine with playing with players who are underprepared? That was like a big conversation and figuring out ways to get together with all the guys to make sure that that's not an issue. And then the third is just mentally, really just going, how do you find confidence in chaos? Like how are you going to be the most confident quarterback amongst this screwed up situation? And I think that's just a mindset. And so those were like three themes that we really just for 5.5, 6 months really hammered.
I'm interested in the offensive play thing, or the offensive line play thing, because I think, I don't know, I like this is the first time I've heard that. And like, so you think that that's going to be noticeable? Like you think yes. Early in the year, like that's something that we're all going to be able to, it's going to be flashing to us.
Well, I think someone will break the sack record and like three other people will be right behind them. Like, I don't know what the sack number is. I'm just saying sacks will be up, pressures will be up, hits will be up. I think completion percentage across the board will be down. There's just going to be more stuff around the quarterbacks.
So is that advantage like Patrick Mahomes, advantage Lamar, like advantage guys who know how to get away, right?
Who can get rid of it quick and who can create time and space. And I've said this to you before. I think the future right. of the position is the quarterback's ability to create time and space. And I look at this differently, right? Because I see Tyler Buchner and I see Caleb Williams. I see the top high school kids in the country
right.
and what type of athletes they are and the programs that they're going to. And so then I train a lot of college guys. I see what's working there. And then obviously on the NFL side of things. So the big stiff guy with a rocket arm, I think those guys are dead. You have to be able to create time and space. All I'm saying is this year, that's going to be at a premium. Whoever ends up playing this year, I think dudes will be running for their lives a lot more than normal. And I don't think that, I'm always on, opportunist. So the way that I coach guys. So I'm not saying that's a problem. I'm saying who's going to take advantage of it the most. So you look at a Sam Darnold and his ability to create time and space. And I go, oh, huge advantage. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. Lamar Jackson, all three of the guys I train. I mean, Josh Allen is, you could make pound for pound, maybe the best athlete at the position. Mm-hmm. And Kyle is a sneaky athlete. There's not a huge gap between him and some of the best athletes at the position. So yeah, it's a lot of, you also don't have to be super athletic to do that. I think Drew Brees does an amazing job of creating time and space. Tony Romo's a guy that comes to mind.
Right.
He doesn't have the coolest looking body ever. Doesn't look like Cam Newton, but he was a magician back there in the pocket. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is feel and mechanics.
That's going to be fascinating too. Cause like, I think about like, okay, like if New England, if like problem solvers like Josh McDaniels are dealt that card, like how do they deploy Cam Newton? Does that change? Right. Like, so I would think it would sort of maybe creep into scheme too and how you're using guys. Right. And I'm not taking Jared out of the competition there either. Him too.
No, for sure. But quick game, putting the ball in the hands of your playmakers, I think screens go up. I think RPOs are already going up anyways, but yeah, I think getting the ball out of your hands and getting it, allowing your playmakers to make moves, that's always a good thing, but it's going to be more of a necessity now. Another thing that I think is going to be group of people I think are going to be negatively affected from this offseason is guys making open field tackles. They just have, nobody's been practicing that.
Right.
Right. Nobody's been doing pursuit drills and sinking their hips. They've been doing pedal plant, ball drills, running, lifting. So I think guys are going to have a harder time, especially early in the year with open field tackles. So if the pass rush is better, if the O-line play is down and open field tackling is negatively affected, then yeah, get the ball out quick.
Right, right. Yeah. So I want to hit the second thing that you mentioned too, which was like the idea of being able to play with players who are less prepared or less ready to get in there. Like, how do you do that? You know what I mean? Like, how do you prepare your quarterback to get ready to play with somebody who isn't prepared, who isn't as prepared as he is?
The first thing you have to do is not let it negatively affect your confidence. Oh, this guy can't stop. This guy can't catch. This guy can't go. Like, you have to figure out, you have to never let it have a negative effect. You have to figure out a way for when this guy's in, here's how we're going to use him, how, why it's going to work. So that's a mindset. But also, I think you've got to get really good and get really used to coaching 24/7 for these quarterbacks, getting guys up to speed, running on the same page. I think that's going to be paramount. And so it's part of it is the mindset and part of it is the communication. The third element is it's going to be important for staffs to keep things on the simpler end, simpler side, so that they can cycle more guys through.
Yeah, that was interesting because I had that, you know, I talked to Matt Rhule about that the other day. And you know, he was saying, like he said to his coaches, I want confident players out there. So if that means we're doing 5 things instead of 10 things, and 5 things really well instead of 10 things just okay, let's just do the 5 things. And then if we get good at those, then we'll do 6 and 7 later, which I thought was like, I don't know, like just a really logical way to handle a situation like this, right?
Totally agree. And a lot of coaches have a hard time on the ego side of things, not being the most innovative guy out there and not putting amazing stuff on tape. A lot of guys have a hard time doing that. But that makes sense that Matt Rhule said that, because if you watch Joe Brady, who's his offensive coordinator now, if you watch Joe Brady's offense at LSU last year, they were not that complex. They ran 4 verticals all the time. In fact, from week 4 on, LSU, every single pass play was a 5-man protection. They didn't run a 6-man. They kept things incredibly simple and let their quarterback figure it out at the line of scrimmage. So that makes sense. New quarterback, new coordinator, new head coach. 7 defensive picks in the draft, all 7 picks were on defense. Like, that's just a lot of youngest D line in the league.
Yep.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
Yeah. All right.
And that guy has a 7-year contract and has the ability to go, you know what? I don't have to be smarter than everybody. I'm just going to try and win some games here and lose my ego. And that guy has none.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I want to shift to the college game. And I want to start with sort of a global question here, which is, if you are advising Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or Trey Lance, or one of the kids who's sort of cemented to go in the first round, what do you think you'd be telling them right now about whether or not they should play in the first place? I know we haven't had a quarterback opt out, but the idea of it's come up, and I wonder, because I think it's we talked with Brady Quinn about this last week. It's just a sort of a different deal at that position, right? Because of responsibility to your teammates and how it can destabilize a program if you leave. And there's all that whole thing about how many reps you need before you go in the NFL. So, like, what would your advice be to one of those kids as far as whether or not he should stick it out and play the college season?
Well, I think it's part of it is, and I'll answer it is if they were to play on time, you know, if they were going to start here pretty soon. Yeah, I think if you got a chance to play, you've been preparing to play for this year. As long as you're okay with the risks and however you feel about that and family and all that, I would advise guys to play and to be. I've always been on the side of things as I work with guys, because I've never been in this situation, but I've certainly been involved in conversations of, do we throw at the combine or not? Yeah. Do we, you know, what do we do at the combine and what do we do at the pro day? I've just always, or do I play in the Senior Bowl or not? So that's, I'm in that, usually in that conversation with somebody every year, or multiple guys. And so for me, I've always, you know, taken the side of, you know, if you're a competitor, then, you know, if I'm a competitor, give me a ball, give me a place to throw. And keep in mind too, where I kind of developed that lens. My older brother was the unanimous for sure going to go number one. Carson played in the Senior Bowl. Carson threw at the combine. Carson just did everything, right? And did not need to. And that was not popular at that time. And so that was just kind of like the world I grew up in watching. But at the same time, these guys, they are competitors. Trevor is not trying to boost his NFL stock. He's trying to win another championship.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I can't speak for what everybody's trying to do. But the guys that are cemented in the first round, I just don't see enough reasons to say, yeah, you should back out, and you should feel totally comfortable with backing out. Like the way that you can, you know, the effect that that has on the program and just all the other things that come with it, outside of some really personal reasons specific to that guy not playing, I think these guys are going to continue to try and play, and I don't blame them.
Do you think like having a certain amount of throws matters too? Like, is that your experience that a guy needs a certain amount of reps before he gets to the league and that can be beneficial, or are you not in that camp?
I don't think there is a certain amount. I think the more experience you can have playing quarterback, the better. It's the same thing for, hey, you know, Jordan, show my 16-year-old enter in all these 7-on-7 tournaments. Well, the more experience that he has playing quarterback, the better. And even if it's bad experience, even if it's getting hurt and bouncing back and having to deal with that, even if it's playing on a bad team, playing with a bad O-line, you're talking about guys getting ready for the NFL. I think you'd love to have, you know, I think you'd love to have 2 or 3 years of starts under your belt, but we've seen people with less than that have success. And we've seen people start 4 years and not have success.
Okay. So I just want to fire through some of the top kids, just your impressions on them going into this year and what you think. And then I want to get a dark horse because, again, you were the guy who ID'd Joe Burrow for me last year. Let's just start with the obvious presumptive number one pick, and that's Trevor Lawrence. And kind of comparing him, like, do you think, like, because you hear about there's that other category, right? Like Andrew Luck, John Elway, Peyton Manning. Like, do you think Trevor Lawrence belongs in that category?
The category?
I'm not saying right now. I'm just saying when they came out. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I just have a hard time with categories that are things like, Tom Brady, is this guy going to be? So I'm not saying you're asking that, but the category I look at it is, if you draft this guy, okay, do you have a chance to win a Super Bowl? I'm not talking about, like, you know, throw for a ton of yards and have a good year. Do you literally have a chance to win a championship with this player if the pieces around him support it? That, I think, is the category that needs to, like, that's the category, right?
Right.
I think Trevor Lawrence, yes. If you put the pieces around him, he can win you a championship. The things that lead me to believe that is the way that he played his true freshman year, the way that he blocked out the negativity last year, and the way that he has stepped into this, I mean, big conversation now.
Right.
Talking about the president retweeting him, and like, he's kind of the voice of the players. Like, him stepping into that, I think that he is now getting himself, he's so well-rounded in the experience that's needed to be in that category that I mentioned, that I would say that, yes, you can put him in that category. Not just because he's 6'5", not just because of the way that he played last year, but no, I just think all the pieces, he's very mature, just got engaged the other day. I think he has all those pieces where, yes, he's in that category.
Do you think is there a flaw in his game? Is there something that he needs to work? I mean, obviously, there's that stuff that everybody can work on, right? But is there something that you see where you're like, you know, like, he could be better there? Or, you know, that some more development will take care of this?
Well, I think I don't see any major flaws in his college game. I think the flaws that will expose themselves in the NFL, that'll happen when he gets there. And so for me, it's less about what are his flaws, and it's more about when you figure out something that's hard for him or it's problematic for him once he gets to the NFL, how quickly does he remedy that? How quickly does he fix it? And in my experience of being around Trevor, he's a guy who is always trying to work and trying to figure out how to get better. So all the talent, all the things are there. It's just going to be how quickly does he improve on the things that get exposed when he gets to the NFL, whether that's up front and figuring out who's blocking who, whether that's seeing coverage. I don't know how he's going to see NFL coverages until he has to see them, but I do believe that he'll fix those things quickly. And that's really the key thing. And then the other thing that all these guys need is they need to develop more touch. I've always said quarterbacks get really good at the things that they have to do to survive. And because they run systems in high school and college that don't require them to throw people open very often, a lot of the college guys I see, even when they're the top ones, they don't have great touch, doesn't mean they can't. It just means they haven't had to do it as much. So that's another thing that all these guys, once they get to the NFL, have to continue to develop.
Okay, Justin Fields, obviously 1 year as a starter. Where are you at on him? And is he close to Lawrence at all? When you're looking at the talent.
I think in the physical ability, they're close. And there's going to be some things that Justin's better. But it's just hard off that 1 year. The hardest thing about scouting Justin, in my opinion, is that the talent around him, you know, the amount of games where they played other teams that were just as good as them, it's kind of like Tua last year. They're just better than everybody. So what does it look like when they're not? You know, what does it look like when he's not on the best team on the field, like in Miami? Like that was always a question. And I don't know the answer to it. It's just I don't know the answer. Right. And so with Justin, I think all those things are there. I would love to see him play another year. It'll be an interesting evaluation. If they don't play and he comes out and is only getting drafted off last season, that'll be an interesting evaluation, because I think there will be a group of people who don't see what the other group sees, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure where I'm at. I've been around him enough to know that, like, he's a great dude. I mean, he's going to be a worker. He's smart. He's going to learn it. He's going to be motivated to do everything that he can. And not everybody is, but I think he's a guy who he's going to come into this league because he can create time and space, and because he can learn things really quickly. I think he's going to be a great player.
What do you think where will the divide be on him then? You said there's going to be you think there'll be a difference of opinion. Where do you think that difference of opinion is going to exist?
Does it translate? Because if he only plays one season, I think there's going to be a group of people that are looking at this as, shoot, is this Mr. Trubisky? He looks awesome in shorts and shirts. He's a great dude. He interviews well. He's all these things. He's a great leader, big program. But, man, I didn't see enough games to know for sure. And I don't know which side of that fence I'll end up on. But I do know enough about him to know that, like, he can do all the things physically. And I think he's capable of learning everything that he's going to need to learn mentally. And he's handled these big, huge moments. Guys like Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, the big similarity is since they were in high school, it's been all eyes on them. And case in point, when Justin Fields is in high school and he shows up to a 7-on-7 tournament, it's not about how many people are there, the fans or any of that. The reality is that every single kid there knows he's there and is waiting to see if he stinks. They're waiting to see him screw up.
Right.
So I see this all the time. These kids that are these big time recruits, the amount of reps they have of having pressure and having to play well, they have like thousands of these reps. And so like that does something to you when you're 15, 16, 17. And Justin has been the man since he's been 15. So like that's relevant to me. And he's handled it, him and Trevor both handle that really, really well. And so that kind of stuff, and then you go to Ohio State and then you have success, like, that just gets you ready to play in a way that if you go to a small school, it doesn't.
Right. So physically it's all there with Fields though. Like physically. 100%. Okay. Yeah. So both those guys, like you think both those guys are sort of just freaks, right? The third guy I want to ask you about is somebody who's sort of creeped into the national consciousness the last few months, really, like, and really like his numbers are out of control. 28 touchdown passes, 0 interceptions, rushed for over 1,000.
I've never seen it before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
seen a good guy play the whole season and not throw a pick, you know?
I mean, it's like you were playing NCAA football on like freshman level, you know, back in the day. So like when you look at Trey Lance from North Dakota State, what do you see? And does what you've seen translate to the NFL?
Yeah. This is crazy, but I think there's a chance. No, not crazy, but people will think it's crazy. I think there's a really good chance that this guy emerges as. I don't know what the draft. Who's going to get picked? Where? Who knows what's happening? You know,
right.
College, the draft.
Yeah.
But once this guy gets into the league, this guy has almost all the same things that I saw in Patrick Mahomes' sophomore and junior year. I'm not making the comparison on that. I'm just saying. The way he carries himself, the unique physical attributes. And when I say unique, I mean no one else has them. And like the quiet competitor that he is, but then he's just got this like smile that's like so likable, and you go like, gosh, I freaking like this kid. Like, I saw him, Patrick, same things. Patrick was more raw and had a weirder mechanics and had less transferable football stuff, right? Played in Texas Tech. This kid's playing North Dakota State. Last two quarterbacks that played there got drafted. So I think this is the guy. I'm all in on Trey Lance.
What sticks out? Like, so what jumps? Like, I guess then the question would be like, because, you know, I think the great ones have superpowers, right? Like, what's Trey Lance's superpower when you watch him play?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Trey Lance is as he goes from college to pro, and the reason that I believe what I believe about him and his potential, he's a guy where if this season gets canceled, he comes out, he's only got one season, and it's at North Dakota State. And so what I said about Justin Fields, there'll be these two camps of, man, is that enough time? I still have questions. Trey may have the same issue, but what I see is because he has the like the velocity that he can create and the energy he can create when he throws, but also how quick it is and also the type of runner he is, when he really gets consistent with a routine over and over and over again, I just look at that and I go, I don't know, that combination might be unique. You talk about a superpower. You know, Josh and Patrick, those guys have the strongest arms, and Lamar's the fastest, and this guy's the tallest, and this guy's the smartest. But I think Trey's superpowers might be that he's just this combination that is really, really rare. But what I see in the similarities to him and Patrick is the stuff that you'll see on Instagram, but it's not showing up on stats, which is, this is an incredibly likable, followable, like hard work. I mean, this guy's that guy. And I just think that the general population, you know, football world doesn't know this yet, but if this becomes an off season where all eyes are on draft prospects and people learn about this Trey Lance guy, I think he's going to explode in a way that Patrick did.
So he's going to be like a rocket ship. It's going to be like, wait, like everybody's been talking Lawrence and Fields. And then it's like, you know, this kid's right with them.
Yes, everyone was talking about a lot of people when that other guy came up, and I just think this is one of those situations.
Okay. All right, so I think those three are the ones that people have talked about the most. Is there someone else? Because if we look at the last look at the last three first overall picks, right? Baker Mayfield was probably a third or fourth round pick going into the 17 college season. Kyler Murray was a baseball player going into the 18 season. Joe Burrow, as we discussed, was seen by most people as probably a middle round pick going into the 19 season. Is there somebody out there that you see that has the potential to have this sort of meteoric rise as those three guys had?
Well, there's some interesting guys in this draft class. But my answer is not even on the draft class. Like, if this guy does have this meteoric rise, I don't even know if he comes out. But it's actually the transfer from USC, JT Daniels, who's at Georgia. And I know there's a quarterback competition there because Jamie Newman also transferred in from Wake Forest, who's a really good player. But I just see in JT Daniels, full disclosure, I've been working with JT Daniels since he was in seventh grade.
Okay.
But I see a lot of the same things that in Joe, in terms of just the off-the-charts intelligence and off-the-charts confidence. Just smarter than him, understands more football than most of the guys their age, or in some cases all the guys, and is just more confident than everybody else their age. Physically, there's a lot of comparisons there too, but also just the story, going from one Big Ten program to another where the talent and all these other things just aligned. The system that he's going to run, he was going to thrive last year in Graham Harrell's system at USC, the run and shoot spread, all that. He was going to thrive before he tore his ACL. But if he gets a chance in Munkin's, Coach Munkin's offense at Georgia, you know, if they play this year, that's a far more complex system, which totally suits him. When you talk about George Pickens is probably the best receiver in the country. He's at Georgia. So they obviously have running backs there. They kind of just always have somebody going in the first two rounds. But you start looking at this on paper and you go, this is starting to look like Joe Burrow at LSU. And I'm not sitting here saying break Joe's records and do what Joe did. But that sort of where did this guy come from? That's definitely what I see as being potential in Georgia with JT Daniels.
And this is like an NFL skill set too that he brings to the table.
Yes.
You're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, people don't realize this guy too. So this guy was he was really the number one recruit in the country, but he was Gatorade Player of the Year his sophomore year. He started at Mater Dei on varsity as a freshman.
Yeah, which people who don't know, by the way, people who don't know, Mater Dei, how would you describe it, Jordan? You're from out there, so you can describe it better than me.
His freshman year, he broke all of Matt Barkley and Matt Leinart's records that they set their senior year.
Yeah.
And they were the top recruits in the country. And so, and sophomore year, he's Gatorade Player of the Year. And then his junior year, he's National Gatorade Athlete of the Year. And then he skips his entire senior year. He was not an early enrollee. He literally went to high school for 3 years. Enrolled early, played as a true freshman, replaced Sam Darnold. And so, and they went 5-7, and he owns the fact that they went 5-7, didn't go to a bowl game, but they had a lot of issues going on, and they got a true freshman kid. And the way that he played at the end of the year was leading into a big, huge sophomore year. And this past season at USC, he wins the job and, you know, has bright, bright future ahead of him and tears his ACL, trying to extend the play. And then he sits there and watches Keaton Slovis play really well and take over the team. And they're, chanting Slovis at the end of the games. And so just at a young man, when you watch, wait a second, this is supposed to be me right now. And it's him and Keaton have a great relationship. But when you watch that happen and you go, wait a second, this thing was taken from you. And then you get to go to a program that is a huge upgrade in a lot of levels. And the conference is obviously an upgrade. And the hunger and all that stuff's still there, and he's healthy now. I look at this and I go, man, this is really similar to what I saw with Joe.
And it's sort of like, in a way, like it's like what you were explaining with Fields and Lawrence too, and that like it sounds like the way you kind of describe him, the spotlight's always been on him, and he's always had people kind of like around him, like waiting to see if, like you, in your words, if he stinks, right? Like, so he's probably had that same thing that you were talking about with Fields and Lawrence, just as far as being used to being in these sorts of environments.
Well, he's had that, but he's also had something that the other guys don't have. And this is not tooting my own horn. This is just being around me. He has been around everybody that I've been training. He lives down the street from me. He's been around all of these guys for years. I had some old pictures the other day. I had a camp, a QB Summit camp years ago. And it was going into his junior year, Jared Goff, Christian Hackenberg, Sam Darnold reporting as a freshman, Jarrett Stidham at Texas Tech, Kyle Allen at A&M, both those guys, the first schools they went to, Deshaun Watson coming off of an ACL injury of his true freshman year, Josh Dobbs, and little eighth grade JT Daniels. He's literally been around this. When I was doing draft training with Deshaun Watson, JT would swing by and sit in the back of the room all the time. So he's also, like, so this was a cool story. He wins Gatorade National Athlete of the Year. And Gatorade, who's one of Deshaun Watson's sponsors at the time, they have Deshaun record a video announcing the high school player athlete of the year. And you'd think that high school kid would go, oh my gosh, Deshaun Watson. And Deshaun, the video is great. He goes, I'm so stoked to, or so, you know, whatever, excited to give this to my boy JT. Like, little did Gatorade know that, like, they'd thrown 20 times together.
Yeah, like that actually is his boy. He's not just saying that.
Totally. So there's a kid who also, like, yes, he's had that target on his back that I'd mentioned a lot of these big-time recruits have that's really valuable, but he's also just been around all my college and NFL guys since he was in middle school.
Okay, last thing. Is there anyone else under the radar that you just sort of have your eye on quarterback-wise? Say there is a college season. If there is a college season, anyone else that you kind of like, you're just sort of intrigued by?
Yeah, I'm super interested in Shane Buechele. He was at Texas. He ended up at SMU. Had a great year last year. He's a smaller guy, so a lot of people are going to keep him under the radar because of his like physical attributes. But in the draft process is when people get to know people. And I know this guy, like the lineage he comes from. He's got his dad and his uncles and all these guys played Major League Baseball forever. He's been around it. Crazy competitor, super confident. And I know that he can spin it, and there's guys his size playing well on Sundays. So he's a guy that no one talks about from a draft perspective that I think actually is going to be a great NFL player.
Okay. So everybody out there can keep an eye on JT Daniels and Shane Buechel, in addition to Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, and Trey Lance. I also understand, Jordan, you've been working on some things with QB Summit, so I wanted to give you a chance to take it away and kind of explain what you're going to be doing the rest of the week.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, COVID I canceled. Basically, I was going to have 12 camps around the country. I was actually supposed to be leaving tomorrow for Germany. Wow. I was set to go 3 weeks and run some Summit International, some camps over in Germany. And so what COVID allowed me to do is focus in on how I can reach more guys and help guys. And so I'm getting ready to launch this week the QB Summit digital platform. So it's going to be a membership-based program, and it's basically everything I got. It's physically, mentally, emotionally. There's content in there. We're going to be doing weekly Zooms, all kinds of NFL guests, but also breaking down tape and really just meeting guys where they're at. And for middle school to high school guys, this is going to be a tremendous resource, not just COVID-wise, but particularly now with no football. I'm a big believer. If your season or your son's season got canceled or postponed, I don't look at it like that. I look at it like the off season got extended. And so what are you going to do to take advantage of it? And so QBSummit.com this week will be launching. And on Instagram, I'm not big on Twitter, but on Instagram, at Jordan Palmer and at QB Summit are the best ways to find out all that information.
You know what? I want to slide in one last one now that I thought of it. Because just when you were talking, it popped in my head, all the guys you work with and everything else. How do you think Jared approaches the competition with Cam in New England? Just because you work with him and everything else, I figure you have probably a pretty good insight into his mindset here.
Well, I think, and this is for sure the stance that I take on anybody in the competition, but you have to keep it about you. What Jarrett needs to do is execute each play to the best of its ability. Distribute the ball to the right place. When you start worrying about what other guys are doing, is when you get in trouble. And I always talk about there's two buckets. What you can control and what you can't control. And the more time that you spend thinking and worrying and stressing about the bucket of stuff that you cannot control, like injuries, like your coaches, like if your O-line stinks, or if there's a competition and this is there and the guys in the locker room are saying this about him, those are things you can't control. And so with Jared, I think he's done an amazing job his last few years, transferring schools, sitting behind Brady, of learning how to just focus on the bucket of stuff that he can control. So right now, I think he handles it great because I think he's going to be locked in on how he can improve. And when he has the ball in his hands, he makes sure he distributes it to the right person. And usually if you do that, you're a hard guy to take off the field, whether that's week one, whether that's during this season, or whether that's in a different place. All things you can't control. So with Jared, I think he's going to be locked in on maximizing his opportunities, and we'll see what happens with Cam.
Okay. That's Jordan Palmer. He gave you the Instagram address. At Jordan Palmer is the Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay. And he is on Twitter, by the way, too. It's at JW Palms. I think I have that right, although you're not on Twitter as much. So
not as much.
Be sure to check him out there. Check out his new QB Summit project. That sounds awesome, too. Should be really great for some younger kids as well. Jordan, always appreciate you coming out.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks again to Jordan. He's always excellent. Gave you guys a good look at what the 2021 draft class is going to look like. You know, obviously the events of today change the complexion of all of that, and we'll be covering that at the website, on the podcast, over the next couple weeks for sure. For now, I want to jump into all of your questions. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get in the six pack. You also get a like there on social media. That means I hit that little heart there. Question number one from John W. Chrysera at Chrysera W. He asks, has your desire for the season to be canceled increased day over day? John, I think if you saw my reaction to social media to the Big Ten canceling its season, which I may have been not the most mature reaction, I think you probably get where I'm coming from here. I don't want football canceled. I don't want the NFL canceled. I don't want college football canceled. I don't want high school football canceled. I don't want any of it canceled. If that's what it comes to, because that's where we are in our country, that's what the doctors say needs to happen, then, you know, it's not because I wanted football to go away. I hope everybody understands that. I hope everybody can hear my voice. How much I love football. It's been my favorite sport since before I can remember. I grew up watching Big Ten football in the NFL, and now one of those has been ripped away from me. So, no, I do not hope that the season gets canceled. I want the NFL to work. I want there to be football in the fall, and I hope everybody is doing their part to make that happen. Question number two from Sean Catalano. That's at Sean Catalano. One, what are the chances the Browns become the sleeper team this season and make a serious playoff run? Sean, I think the division is going to make that tough. I think the Steelers are going to be really good. The Ravens are what they are. And, you know, I don't know if they'll get to 14-2 again, but I think that's still an 11-12-1 team. And the Bengals could be a tougher out than you might think. But I do think the Browns are going to be competitive, and I could see them getting to 8-8 or so. I think Baker Mayfield's going to take a step forward working with Kevin Stefanski and Alex Van Pelt. Obviously, you know, if Landry and Beckham can stay healthy, he's got good receivers. He's got a good crew of tight ends with Austin Hooper joining David Njoku. The tackle situation, I think, is key. It's gotten a lot better. Signing Jack Conklin and then drafting Jedrick Wills. They've got one of the best running backs in the league in Nick Chubb, and they've got some talent on defense too. So I think they're going to be better. I think one of the keys for all of the first-year coaches and Kevin Stefanski in this group is being creative, being simple, getting the players in a position to play fast. And I think if you look back at 2011, our best comp for this, 2011 lockout, the two teams that were most successful that had first-year coaches were the Broncos, who advanced around in the playoffs, and the Niners, who went to the NFC Championship game. Those two coaches, with those two first-year coaches, John Fox basically ran a college offense for Tim Tebow. He was creative. He threw something at the NFL it wasn't necessarily ready for. And Jim Harbaugh used a lot of the tenets of what he'd used at Stanford when he's dealing with all the different things in the college game at the NFL level. So it helped him deal with the lack of time, deal with the different circumstances, all of that. So I think it's going to take some level of creativity and ingenuity with the circumstances for first-year coaches to get there. Kevin Stefanski is a really bright guy. We'll see if he can get it done. Question number three from John Thrasher. That's at Thrasher. Why does the NFL consistently list what college someone played at? See the COVID-19 list you post regularly? Good question, John. I get this question a lot. The reason why is because there are players who have the same name. And say it's a John Smith or a Matt Johnson or whatever, a common name. That's a way of differentiating one guy from the next. And so it's just an easy way for the NFL, when they're putting that wire out, which is an internal wire that goes to the teams, so the teams immediately know what they're looking at when they get that list. Question number four. This is from Nate Ashbacher. That's at Nash Bacher. Which of the teams being most hyped this season will fail to reach anywhere near their fans' expectations? You know, it's a good question. And the one team that I think you have to put on your radar a little bit would be, like, I look at Tampa. I think Tom Brady is going to be really good. There are some moving parts in their offensive line. Are they starting Tristan Wirfs? The defense got a lot better at the end of last year, but there were some lightning in a bottle situations there, Shaq Barrett, and they play in a tough division with Atlanta and New Orleans. Carolina, we'll see. I think they're in a rebuilding phase, but you know, Tampa's the one where you look at them and it's like they're all in for right now, but there are a lot of variables at play as well. So that'd be the one that I would sort of just keep an eye on. I think they're going to be really I'd pick them to win 10 games right now, and as much as this stuff is covered, I think it's hard to find a team that really, like, you look at and say their expectations are way beyond everybody else's. That's just sort of the way that the league works now, but I would say Tampa would be the one that I would give you right there. Question number five from Not Who You Think I Am. That's at Don Ridenour. Rookie of the year in this crazy year. Don, I'm going to give you Joe Burrow. And the reason why, the bar for quarterbacks to win rookie of the year is a little lower. You just have to be good. You don't need to be great. And so I think Joe Burrow is walking into a situation where, you know, it's been sort of acknowledged that he's going to be the starting quarterback since he was drafted. Everything in the spring they've done, the Bengals have done, has been to get him ready to play. And his supporting cast, if Jonah Williams works out at left tackle, won't be that bad. He's thrown to A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd. They drafted T. Higgins. You got Drew Sample, a good young tight end. You got Joe Mixon behind you with Gio Bernard as sort of the Swiss Army knife of a back. I sort of like Joe Burrow as a guy who can get there and get the Bengals in a position where they're competitive again, which I think would be enough to win him Rookie of the Year. Question number six, and this is from Mike Welsh. This is MP Welsh. What are the odds of the Power 5 conferences playing this fall, and what will be the fallout on drafting if they don't? I will say this. By the time you listen to this, the Big 12 may have gone down. If the Big 12 goes down, I think it's become very, very difficult because the Pac-12 tied itself to the Big 10. If you read my colleagues, Pat Forty and Ross Dellinger, have done a great job through this whole thing. The ACC sort of tied itself to the Big 12. If those two go down, does the SEC just have its own season? I don't know. I mean, I think it's, to me, that's tough to see. Appreciate you guys coming out. I know this is a longer podcast, but we had something to react to. Fairly big news. I'd say the biggest cancellation so far since the beginning of the pandemic, with the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceling their seasons again. By the time you listen to this, maybe the Big 12 has done something too. Do you guys know where to find us? You can always find us and the Weekside Pod with Jenny and Connor and the Weekend Review Pod and Gary's Pod with Andy Benoit. We're all on one feed, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. You can find us on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever you get your shows, we're there. And we want your feedback too. So if you guys like the show that we're doing here on Wednesdays, let me know. If there's something you think we could do different, let me know. If you want more of the long form podcast, let me know. You guys know where to find me on social media, at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert_Breer on Instagram. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.